Today on the 21st show, the election is in the books, mostly. Democrats kept a firm grip on power in Illinois, leaving Republicans on the sidelines.
I choose to fight to protect our workers. I choose to fight for women's rights, for civil rights, for voting rights.
Illinois can be better. Illinois must be better. Our leaders must be better. And J.B. Pritzker, you need to be better.
We've got some of Illinois' top political reporters and analysts talking about races for governor and other statewide elected offices, members of Congress in the Illinois General Assembly, the state Supreme Court, and the fate of the constitutional amendment pushed by organized labor. I'm Brian Mackey, and that's all coming up today on The 21st Show, which is a production of Illinois Public Media. But first, the news. From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. As we go to air Wednesday morning, the national political picture still has not completely come into focus. Races that will decide control of the U.S. House and Senate are still up in the air, and it may be days or even weeks before we know the full story there. But here in Illinois, the forecast red wave failed to make much of even a ripple on the blue shores of our state. Incumbent Democratic Governor J.B. Pritzker cruised to victory against Republican State Senator Darren Bailey. The AP called that race at 7 p.m., literally the moment the polls closed. In his victory speech, Pritzker played up Democratic achievements and positioned himself as a fighter against anti-democratic forces in the dominant Trump wing of the Republican Party.
Thank you for placing your trust in me to carry out this mission for four more years. I won't let you down.
Elsewhere, Democratic Illinois U.S. Senator Tammy Duckworth won a second six-year term, defeating Republican attorney Kathy Salvey. That race was also called right at 7 p.m. In U.S. House races, it appears Democrats won all of the seats they gerrymandered to favor their party. Democratic Congressman Sean Casten held on in the Chicago suburbs. In the 13th District in central Illinois, Democrat Nikki Budzinski defeated Republican Regan Deering. And while the Associated Press has still not called the 17th District race as we go to air Wednesday morning, Democrat Eric Sorensen has claimed victory and Republican Esther Joy King has conceded. That was thought to be Republicans' best opportunity for a pickup in Illinois. All that together brings the Illinois congressional delegation to 14 Democrats and 3 Republicans. Meanwhile, Democratic candidates seem to have won both partisan races for the Illinois Supreme Court in newly redrawn districts, expanding their majority there. One of the few remaining questions as we go to air is the statewide constitutional amendment backed by labor unions. That's still up in the air at this point. We've got a lot to talk about, and we're going to spend the entirety of today's program on the election with an all-star panel of political reporters and experts. Amanda Vinicky is a correspondent for WTTW's Chicago Tonight. Amanda, always great to talk with you. Thank you for making time with us this morning on the 21st show.
Sure thing, Brian. Glad to be here talking about one of our, I don't know if it's favorite topics, but it's certainly very important and interesting in day after election. Thanks for having.
It's been our life for going on 2 decades now.
Yeah.
Chris Mooney is a professor of political science at the University of Illinois Chicago. I should say an emeritus professor of political science at the University of Illinois Chicago. Chris, thanks for making time to be with us as well.
Yeah, happy to do it, Brian.
And Dan Petrella covers state government for the Chicago Tribune. Dan, thank you for being on. Really appreciate it.
Glad to be here.
And listeners, we also want to hear from you this morning at 800-222-9455. Join our panel. How did you vote? What races were you most interested in? And what do you want to see from a state government that will continue to be dominated by Democrats? Again, 800-222-9455 is the number to join our conversation. That's 800-222-9455. Or you can tweet us at 21st Show. We've also got a lot of great responses from our texting group this morning that we'll be sharing throughout the show. All right. So, Amanda, let's just begin with Pritzker, who, as I mentioned, obviously won re-election as governor. How would you characterize this victory? What kind of margin are we looking at here compared to past races?
I mean, here's the thing. This is a huge victory for Pritzker for several reasons. Number one, because he put a lot of money into this early on. He's got plenty of money to spare. He is a billionaire, so he has the personal wealth to do it, but he did get a return on that investment. And this is a bet, maybe not a risky one per se that he had made early on, but certainly an interesting one in that he started putting money into this campaign, into the primary, to really get the candidate that he wanted to run against in the general election. So it was a calculus that paid off, though some skeptics may sort of sneer at that in terms of just what it means for democracy and parties interfering with the other. It also is significant because, and I think you could perhaps hear some of the tone of this in his speech, which is, his remarks tend to be lofty, but this one was particularly so. And as Pritzker is looking possibly to the national stage in the White House, he needed to have a victory, but not just any victory. He needed to have a double-digit lead, and he got that. You know, just prior to the election, we'd heard from some Democrats that internal polling showed he was a little behind, and they thought that it might be a little too close for comfort. Not that he was going to lose, but that this would be a tighter race than Pritzker would want. That didn't happen. As you noted, Brian, I mean, I was literally on air and in talking about the race when, lo and behold, just seconds after the polls closed, it was called in Pritzker's favor. So yeah, I mean, it was an incredible victory for him. And again, not just the money that he poured into his own race, but into others as well, which paid off dividends for the Democratic Party.
Yeah, you hit on a lot of great points there, and I want to come back to some of those. I want to put a pin in, one, the idea that he picked his opponent and got the opponent he wanted and what that says about politics. Also, this question of his potential national ambitions, right? It seemed like he had multiple audiences for that speech last night, and we're going to listen to a longer excerpt of that a little later. But Chris Mooney, let me bring you in and just ask for your top-line reaction to the Pritzker. You know, we have these water metaphors, right? Red waves became a red puddle or a red ripple. I was thinking, in Illinois, you have a blue tide, and it's a pretty high tide by now, and it takes a lot of drought to actually see some red rocks at the bottom of that blue tide. So what's your top line reaction to what?
Well, Brian, I couldn't possibly stretch an analogy as far as that in any way, but what I can say is that this for all the sound and fury, you know, for the millions and tens of millions of dollars that were spent in this race and all the acrimony and the really downright vitriol on both sides, the results came out pretty much as polling showed early on. I mean, it's what we'd expect from basically from partisan distribution. And you can see all the statewides are all basically the same, right? The Democrats won more or less 55 to 42 or 43 or something like that on each of the statewides within just a couple of points. It's actually quite remarkable. And what this demonstrates is that the state of Illinois is much more aligned with the Democratic Party as it exists today than the Republican Party that exists today. The Republican Party in Illinois is now, and has been for a while, but this is another demonstration of the fact that it's really, in some sense, irrelevant on a statewide basis. You could see the irrelevancy that they had because they didn't even expect to win. I mean, Darren Bailey, I watched in particular two debates, both debates with the governor's office, but also for the governor's office, but also for the U.S. Senate seat. And in both cases, the Republicans, you know, even though they were only given like 30 seconds or 60 seconds to say various things about what they were going to do, they often would run out of time because they didn't really have any specifics because they knew they were going to lose. And Darren Bailey in particular, I mean, he had particular things he would say. He was shaming JB. He was complaining about various things. He thinks JB needs to do better, but he never said exactly what he would do. He said many things that he wouldn't do, like I can't do this and I can't do that. So I think it's just really a sad commentary on the state of partisan politics in this state, where we really are becoming, largely a one-party state, and that's not good for anybody. And you know, there's a lot of reasons for that, and we can talk about that. But
yeah. You know, can I jump in briefly? And I think that there's a lot, of course, to dissect about the future of the Republican Party and the state of politics. But in terms of just this notion of agendas and platforms, I frankly think that was somewhat lacking on both sides, other than what won't change. Pritzker has talked about trying to make college free for any Illinois student. We don't have any specifics on this policy. Who would be a student if there's, you know, an age cutoff, what exactly that means, but any making higher education free to any Illinois college or any Illinois college student from a family at or below the median income. But beyond that, we didn't get a whole lot of policy. It was more just holding the tide and successes of what was done in the first term, less really of any sort of agenda and future plans for a term two.
Dan Petrella.
That is true, man. Yeah, and I grant you that. But I was just really struck by the really complete lack. I mean, at least the incumbents. And go back and take a look at the Salvi Duckworth debate, if we want to call it that forum that you guys held, on WTTW. Duckworth is saying, well, this is going, you know, there's this, and they're talking about politics or about policy and government and whatnot. And Salvi was just making very broad generalizations, ran out of things to say before her time, oftentimes, So I just think it's a symptom of the Republicans just giving up. The fact that they nominated Darren Bailey and Tom DeVore for two of the most high profile statewide races indicates that.
These are good points, because these are not top tier candidates, right? And this often happens for U.S. Senate. I can't remember the last time there was a high profile Republican like Dick Durbin had a series of people who were relatively low profile ran against him in recent years. And these top candidates don't want to get into these races, right? And Dan Petrella, we're even seeing now a change in leadership in the state house, Republican Party leadership there.
That's right. This morning, Jim Durkin, the House Republican leader, put out a news release saying that he is not going to run for another term as the GOP leader in the House, which I think is really an indication of what Chris and Amanda were saying, sort of where the Republican Party in Illinois is going from here. It was a poor night for them on the House side, a little bit on the state Senate side as well. And Durkin, I mean, he lost most of his leadership team in this election through a couple folks, three members of his leadership team running for statewide office, another one losing in a primary. Looks like Keith Wheeler, who's another member of his leadership team, lost his reelection bid out in the sort of the far west suburbs. So a lot of soul searching, I think, for Illinois Republicans this morning.
Yeah, we want to read a text now we got from Christopher in Brimfield that said, the GOP died a few years ago. It sold itself for a red hat. And this put us in mind of something we heard from former Governor Jim Edgar, who was the last two-term Republican governor. He was on WBBM TV last night. Let's listen to what he said.
The party has moved much farther to the right. And in a state like Illinois, that's not a victory formula. It just kind of means you're going to be in the minority. And I think that's unfortunate, because it's important that we have a viable two-party system in Illinois.
So, Chris, let me ask you. I mean, do you see... a change coming in the Republican Party here, or is it actually, I mean, this is a story we've been talking about for decades now, right? I can remember Judy Bart Topinka, and was it 2004, talking about the circular firing squad of the Republican Party. Is something changing? Is the conservative wing ascendant again after Bruce Rauner's money managed to squelch them a little bit a decade ago?
You're right. I mean, this is a long-term problem, and there's a variety of aspects to it. And I mean, the more general problem is that the National Republican Party is moving away from the kind of demographic mix that is the state of Illinois, right? I mean, we have, we're not Iowa, we're not Alabama, we have a major urban center, one of the great cities in the world in which a third of the people of the state live, right? The county of Cook has 5.2 million people, right? And that, and then, you know, the whereas the party has moved towards the Darren Baileys of the world, the Donald Trumps of the world, the white, angry Christian evangelicals, males of the world. And there's just not enough of them in this state. And what that's done is all these various things that have happened over the last 15 years, billionaires walking in, you know, taking over because the more typical donors, the smaller donors, the more, you know, that we've seen over the years, you know, why are they going to keep giving their money when they're going to lose over and over again? So they don't. So that allowed, you know, the people, and really this is the story of Illinois politics for the last 10 years that's, I think, most important, that is that politics in Illinois has been basically taken over by 3-4 super rich white men, most of whom don't even live in the state anymore. This is, you know, it's been their plaything. You know, Bruce Rauner, Ken Griffin, Dick Eline, it, you know, and maybe one or two others. And on the Democratic side, J.B. Pritzker, right? And what that's done is really eroded, I think, the bedrock of the political parties. They don't have to raise money anymore. And then when one of these rich guys walks away, you've got no infrastructure, and the thing collapses, and you end up with Darren Bailey as your nominee.
One thing I would say there, though, if I can jump in.
Briefly, we need to take a break here, but go ahead, Dan.
Sure. The one thing the Democrats, obviously Pritzker is putting in a ton of money, but they still have a lot of support from labor unions and trial lawyers and other folks. So I think, you know, financially their base of support is a little broader than just one guy.
All right, we're going to continue this conversation. We'd love to hear from you at 800-222-9455. What did you see in your part of Illinois last night? Who did you vote for? Are you happy with the outcome? Are you unhappy with the outcome of the races in your area? Again, 800-222-9455. More on Election 22, the top races, down ballot races, with Amanda Vinicky, Chris Mooney, and Dan Petrullo when we return. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us. This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are recapping last night's election results, talking about what it means for the future of Illinois politics. As we've been saying, Democrats had a very strong showing last night, despite predictions of a national red wave affecting their prospects here in Illinois. That does not seem to be how things played out. We're talking about this with Dan Petrullo, who covers state government for the Chicago Tribune, Amanda Vinicky, a correspondent for WTTW's Chicago Tonight, and Chris Mooney, Emeritus Professor of Political Science at the University of Illinois, Chicago. And I want to play now some of Darren Bailey's, well, I was going to call it a concession speech, and I guess he did get around to that, sort of, but it was really maybe more of a defeat speech. Let's listen to how he began.
Friends, God bless you. This is amazing. And I do want to tell you something. This isn't part of this speech, but there's still room for a miracle, friends. Okay? Still room for a miracle until all the votes are counted. But from what we know, tonight didn't turn out the way we wanted. But thanks to God, we still have so many blessings.
Bailey delivered his speech more than 2 hours after the Associated Press called the race for Governor Pritzker, and an hour after Governor Pritzker's victory speech. He finally got around to saying he did call Governor Pritzker to concede the race, but his speech was not what you would call conciliatory.
Republicans need to be the loyal opposition in Springfield, loyal to our state, loyal to our country, loyal to our Constitution, but in opposition to the radical policies of the Democrats. That's right. Friends, we must work together to find solutions for all the people of Illinois. Illinois can be better. Illinois must be better. Our leaders must be better. And J.B. Pritzker, you need to be better. You need to be better for Illinois. You need to be better for our children. And you need to be better for our grandchildren.
So, Amanda, maybe I'm naive, and I guess the era of I stand ready to work with my honorable opponent is over, but what does it mean to be the loyal opposition when you are a super minority party?
Well, and Bailey, it's unclear what exactly his role will be. Clearly, he's beloved by much of the audience that he had there at his party and is still very much intertwined with and sort of the unofficial leader of the quote-unquote Eastern Bloc. But he will not be returning to Springfield following a veto and potential lame duck session. He gave up his seat in the Illinois Senate in order to run for governor. So where he goes from here is little known. And I think particularly, as you noted earlier, Durkin moving on from his leadership post, we've talked for years about a split in the Republican Party between moderates and conservatives that has certainly come to the fore with, in a sense, the conservative wing winning. When you look at the nominees for such as Bailey, such as DeVore in the primaries, but I don't think there is an easy answer to the question that you posed, Ryan, in terms of what does it mean for the party? It appears as if they're already slender minorities. They're large minority status in both chambers of the General Assembly is only going to be exacerbated by the results of Tuesday. And that's harder when you have lost a lot of folks who have harder to manage, harder to sort of make any inroads when you do not have any of the experience that is going out the window from those. There was mention of Secretary of State candidate Dan Brady, for example, who've been around Springfield for a long time and maybe have some relationships with Democrats to try and get in there. A lot of those will be gone. And when you are left with candidates who I think are truly offensive to one another, as was exemplified in that speech by Bailey and throughout the campaign between Bailey and Pritzker, Democrats really just have no taste for the non-moderate Republicans. And that is who is not exclusively, but by and large, going to remain in Springfield.
Dan, we mentioned earlier there was some talk that this is the opponent Pritzker wanted. Can you remind us, for people who don't follow this stuff day in and day out like you do, what did that mean? What is that Pritzker got the opponent he wanted to run against?
Sure. So the governor, using his vast personal fortune, funneled some money through the Democratic Governors Association to fund ads in the Republican primary. I believe maybe he paid for some ads with his campaign as well, but attacking Richard Ervin, who is the Aurora mayor, who was sort of the moderate candidate who was funded by billionaire Ken Griffin, and also ran some ads purportedly attacking Darren Bailey, but touting that he was too dangerous or too conservative for Illinois to sort of give him a boost in the Republican primary, which is now, as we saw with, as Amanda was alluding to, the people who won those primaries, that's a very conservative base now that comes out for Republican primaries. So, I think Amanda alluded to it earlier as well. There's some question about whether this is sort of playing with fire. Governor Pritzker would say and has said that he wasn't saying anything during the primary that he wouldn't say about Darren Bailey in the general election. But it's a strategy that, paid off.
Chris, what do you think about that? I've heard some national commentators, even people who sort of style themselves as anti-Trump or, pro-democracy, who are troubled by this idea of a Democrat interfering in a Republican primary. And, presumably if the situation was reversed, the same thing.
Well, it's not nothing that's new, that's for sure. I think it's what we've seen in more of a, this case, more of a robust approach to this tactic is due to the fact that there's just so much money sloshing around, right? I mean, 50 million or whatever gets tossed in the direction of Griffin and Ken Griffin, Aurora Mayor, whose name is slipping my mind. You just mentioned him. You mentioned I was retired. That's been a whole
thing. Emeritus. Richard Irvin is who you're going for.
Irvin, that's it. Yeah. So you know, $50 million over there, and then you know, Bailey. I mean, Pritzker checks out his checking account and says, "Well, maybe we toss a few million in that direction." It's a lot of money, and they didn't. You know, where else are you going to put it? You try these things. It's absolutely playing with fire. But in Illinois, I think they made a calculation that Darren Bailey was not viable as a statewide candidate state of Illinois. Obviously, they were correct after, you know, big election. All, you know, he was seen around the state. I mean, he didn't have that much money to spend, but that is Bailey. But I think you've seen so. You know, it didn't come out. So it's not a new tactic. It is a dangerous tactic. It's due to the extra money that's around. In this case, it worked out for the Democrats. There's a lot of dirty tricks in politics. And this is probably one of the least dirty of the dirty tricks I can think of.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit more about Pritzker himself then. And I think somebody noted earlier, and this was my impression as well, that his speech last night maybe suggested that he had bigger ambitions than taking on the Illinois Republican Party. Let's listen to an excerpt.
You see, hate is a chronic condition. The patient can get better, but we can never stop being vigilant in preventing its return. Unfortunately, a cancer has spread through one ideological wing of this nation to infect the patient itself. They've had ample opportunity to treat the disease, and they have refused to do so at every turn. The result has been treasonous insurrectionists tearing down the doors of the U.S. Capitol. The maiming of Capitol Police. And an attack on the 82-year-old husband of the Speaker of the House with a hammer in his own home. There's no nice or easy way to say this, but until the Republican Party is ready to expel the extremists in their midst, we need to do it for them at the ballot box.
Amanda Vinicky, what do you make of that?
Yeah. I mean, the governor has been asked repeatedly, and even as we speak, he is talking, giving sort of a press conference on the election postmortem / celebration, perhaps, for more on his side, but questioned repeatedly, will you serve four terms? It was sort of a stunt that Bailey tried to pull, asking him to take that pledge, and Pritzker didn't bite and hasn't been forced to, merely saying that he will support Biden should the president make another run for the White House. But I do think it is no surprise that he has higher ambitions. Pritzker has been involved not just in Illinois politics, but for in national politics for all of his adult life. He has given money. We've talked a lot about the millions that he has funneled to candidates in Illinois, but he's also sent money outside of state lines. And I think that, again, he has the funds to spare. It's not like this is a hardship on him. And he can reasonably argue that it is in his interest as a Democrat, and given all the incidents that he spoke about and the bringing back your analogy from earlier, sort of the tidal wave change of the GOP, that's money that he believes in investing. But it is also not a stretch to see all of that money and contributions as an investment in goodwill should he have an opportunity to look at a run for president.
I suspect this is one of those topics that intrigues us as political journalists and political scientists more than it does everyday people. So I think we can probably move on from the governor's race for now. Let me remind listeners, this is the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking with Amanda Vinicky and Dan Petrella and Chris Mooney about last night's election returns. 800-222-9455 if you want to join our conversation. And let's move now. So I think the governor's outcome, the other statewide elected officials who all won pretty easily. Alexei Giannoulias, who used to be the state treasurer, will be the next Secretary of State, succeeding Jesse White, who was in that office for decades, literally, defeated Dan Brady, a state representative, 54 to 44 with 90% of the votes in. Tammy Duckworth easily won re-election over Kathy Salvi, the Republican attorney, 56 to 42 with 90% of the votes in. Similar story, seemingly, in other statewide elected officials. But maybe some of the surprises were in Congress, where it was thought to be more competitive for Republicans. Dan Petrella, can you what races were you most closely watching there, and anything surprise you about the outcomes?
I was interested. I should say I was probably most closely watching the Sean Casten race because that's where my parents live and where I grew up. So I was
personal interest, fair enough. Yeah,
interested in that one. But I think the really interesting ones are the 13th district down there in central Illinois, where Nikki Budzinski, the Democrat, beat Regan Deering. That's an area that Democrats have been trying to figure out how to carve up for a couple map making processes, at least now, to get a Democrat there in that area that kind of ties together Champaign-Urbana and Decatur and Springfield and the Metro East. And they have finally succeeded in drawing those lines in just the right way, it would appear. And then the other one was the 17th out in the northwest corner of the state, Quad Cities area, where Sherry Bustos, who's a prominent Democrat who won in a district last time around that was won by Donald Trump, decided to retire. And it appears the race has not been called yet by the Associated Press, but Eric Sorensen, who's a former TV weatherman from Rockford, I believe, has about a 3 percentage point lead over Esther Joy King. So those were a couple of downstate races that were really of interest and kind of an indicator of, I think, the direction the winds are blowing in Illinois last night.
And Amanda, they drew this map. Democrats redrew these congressional maps to try and give themselves a 14-3 advantage. And there were some critics out there who said, maybe they didn't do a good enough job with their map making. They could have, drawn it differently. But it seems like it paid off for them.
Yeah. Did they get too greedy? Had been some of the questions going into this race. But as you noted, Brian, I mean, it did pay off. And of course, not going to do enough to change national trends, it appears, in terms of power going to the GOP in DC. But Illinois going there. And I think we had seen perhaps some examples that Democrats were fretting by visits last weekend from the President of the United States and the Vice President of the United States. That I think showed that they really wanted to be sure that they had dotted their I's, crossed their T's, made their visits, paid their money, done all that was necessary to try to boost the Democratic members of Congress in some of these tighter races, particularly in the suburbs when you look at Casten and Underwood. And I'm guessing that was not really what swayed voters, that it likely has things to do with who knows what it is. Is it a lot of talk about a national red wave that had more people that maybe were deciding where they wanted to go, going toward Democrats? Is it abortion? Is it the notion of Donald Trump making another run for the presidency that is something that doesn't go over well in the suburbs where where a lot of these districts are hinged on? So we don't know what it was, but yes, it was a bet that certainly paid off for the Democrats in drawing those lines. And Brian, I do think that that's something we need to focus on. And as we speak about legislative races and congressional races, you don't want to make too much of the district boundaries, but you also can't ignore that Democrats, because they did then, and of course will continue to have complete control of Illinois government, from supermajorities in the Illinois House and Senate, all constitutional offices, and majority on the state Supreme Court, were able to design their own districts at both of those levels.
And this is a story across the country in a lot of ways. I saw an analyst, national analyst, last night making the point that Republicans wouldn't be as close as they are to gaining control of the House had they not so thoroughly gerrymandered seats in many states. And likewise, Democrats wouldn't be so close to having either a narrow defeat or possibly holding on to the U.S. House if they had not had a number of Republican maps thrown out by courts in recent years. We're going to continue this conversation conversation. We need to take another break here on the 21st Show. 800-222-9455. If you want to join us, how did you vote? What are you seeing in your part of Illinois? Let us know. More to come in just a moment. Stay with us. This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're recapping last night's election returns here in Illinois. We're talking with Amanda Vinicky of WTTW-TV, the PBS station in Chicago, and their flagship program, Chicago Tonight, and also Chris Mooney, who is an emeritus professor of political science and a specialist in state governance at the University of Illinois, Chicago, and also Dan Petrella, who covers state government for the Chicago Tribune. 800-222-9455 to join our conversation. 800-222-9455. As we said earlier, Governor J.B. Pritzker obviously easily won re-election. U.S. Senator Tammy Duckworth easily won re-election to her second six-year term. It appears that Democrats got all the congressional victories they had gerrymandered and hoped to get. 14 seats to in the congressional delegation as compared to three Republicans. They're also poised to retain control, certainly retain control of the Illinois House and Senate, supermajority in the Senate. I haven't actually seen the latest House numbers there. I don't know if anyone wants to pipe in on that. But we also cannot end this conversation without talking about the Illinois Supreme Court. This may have flown under the radar for some of our listeners who are not in the Chicago television market, but if you were in the northern part of the state, you were seeing a lot of ads here. This was the first time the court district seats, Illinois Supreme Court, there's seven seats, three from Cook County, four from the rest of Illinois. Those district boundaries were first drawn in 1964 and had never been changed. Which, you know, despite the population shift into the Chicago suburbs, so they were pretty unbalanced. They were redrawn by Democrats, and it appears that those paid off. Dan, do you want to, I don't know if you followed any of these races, if you want to talk about the significance of what we might be seeing on the Illinois Supreme Court.
I did, yes. So it was a very kind of sort of convoluted process that actually goes back to the 2020 election when voters for the first time voted not to retain a justice on the Illinois Supreme Court, Thomas Kilbride. That gave Republicans the opportunity to potentially pick up a seat in this election. The boundaries were redrawn. Democrats would say to try to better represent population, to get the districts to be more evenly populated across the state. Republicans would say to the Democrats were doing it to try to hold on to their 4-3 majority on the court. So there were two.
I would say, as a former reporter for the Chicago Daily Law Bulletin, both things are actually true. went to favor Democrats, but the seats were pretty unrepresentative. So
yes,
go ahead.
Yeah. I think there were fair arguments. That's in a situation where two things can be true at the same time. You had Michael Burke in the third district, which is sort of part of the old Kilbride district under the new map, running. He was appointed to replace a different justice who had retired. He was running for a full term. It looks like he is trailing by pretty narrowly to Mary Kate O'Brien, who's a Democrat. That race, it doesn't look like has been called yet, and there's still some precincts out. And then further north in Lake County and surrounding areas, Mark Curran, who's the former Lake County Sheriff and ran for U.S. Senate against Dick Durbin 2 years ago, was running against a judge named Elizabeth Rocheford, and she appears to have won by about a nine point margin. So the Democrats appear to have secured their majority on the court, which is
added to it probably.
Yes. Yeah. And I was going to say, I was trying to do the math in my head as I was talking about it. So I think it will tip it to be a 5-2 majority in favor of Democrats, which, you know, Republicans were sort of seeing that as potentially like a last line of defense against Democratic policies that they find to be objectionable. But Democrats were sort of portraying it as a way to protect abortion rights in Illinois from potential court challenges.
you know, the vast majority of things the Illinois Supreme Court does are typically 7-0. So it's not like the U.S. Supreme Court where everything is 5-4 or 6-3 now. But, you know, this is, you know, on those handful of heater cases, the divisive cases, this could make a difference because it has been 4-3. Now it's expected to be 5-2. I'm looking for the tweet. I think Brendan, friend of the program, Brendan Moore, tweeted this morning that I can't remember if Burke conceded or O'Brien declared victory, but that race does seem to be going to the Democrats.
And one notable thing, Brian, if I can, about the court, we were talking about the maps and Democrats having drawn them. The court has twice, I believe, rejected efforts by voters to put a referendum on the ballot that would take the legislature out of the redistricting process or at least give it less power in drawing maps. And that was something the Republicans also were hoping to see with potentially flipping the court, is that maybe they could get a referendum on the ballot finally to take some of that map making power away from the Democrats.
Yeah. And I mean, and the court majority was decisive as well in the idea of whether to put caps on non-economic damages in civil liability cases, which is something that has been pushed by Republicans in a lot of other states. But the court has been a block against that here in Illinois, despite many cycles of lobbying efforts. I'm going to share another text we got from a listener. This is from Ann in Urbana, who said, we'd like to see them continue to work on the infrastructure of the state. She's talking about Democrats here. Continue working on clean energy, solar, wind, encouraging electric vehicles. Work with higher education institutions to make them more affordable and even free for lower income students. Encourage trade schools as a healthy and respected alternative to college. Amanda, what can we expect from the Democrats moving forward? You mentioned earlier something of a lean agenda from the Pritzker camp.
Yeah, so the texter or listener had noted something about making college more affordable. That is something that Democrats say is one of their achievements in terms of increasing the number of MAP grants through the current budget plan, the Monetary Award Program grants that help low-income students pay tuition. And again, this is pretty much the one solid thing that the governor has said he wants to do beyond continuing to right the ship of the state's finances, sort of just it is the one plan that he has specifically said. And we don't have specifics on it, but just making college more affordable for mid to low-income students. What will they continue to do? Presumably, yes. Continue to push forward an agenda like the one that was mentioned, because it is how they have succeeded. I think perhaps they might go continually more progressive, given the beatdown of Republicans and a lack of any sort of moderates. This is sort of one of those things where whereas Democrats do have gains and of course are celebrating those successes, they'd already had veto-proof majorities and the ability to pass legislation without any support from Republicans. That will likely, when all is said and done, the mail-in ballots are counted, it appears as if that will be boosted even more. What does that mean for the Democratic Party? They clearly, despite a lot of anxiety and angst over outcome of the Safety Act, and particularly Democrats who had voted for it in the suburbs, fearful that Republican opponents' accusations that they were being, you know, willy-nilly and light on crime were going to succeed, that didn't pan out. So I think we're going to be watching to see where Democrats go with this. Is it going to be a more progressive agenda? Will they be more careful in order to keep these numbers down the line? I'm guessing not as much of the latter, because they were not punished, it appears, at all at the polls for the things that they'd been nervous they may be.
Chris, you know, I've made this point before in recent years, but when you talk about both sides, right, which is kind of a negative term for people deploy against journalists, political journalists these days. But mm-hmm. The both sides in Illinois today maybe is progressive Democrats and moderate Democrats, as opposed to Democrats and Republicans. When you're talking
that's really a fundamental problem for the party system in the state. When you have a one party system, it is difficult for the average voter to understand what's going on. Right, because what happens is if it's the one party system, then that particular party that's running the show breaks down into factions. You get your JB faction, you got the suburban faction, whatever, you know, and that is very difficult for voters to understand. So, for example, in the primary for the Republican gubernatorial nomination, Richard Urban, who now I remembered his name, you know, he is different than Darren Bailey, who's different than Gary Rabine, and all those people are different. But it's, you know, it's hard for the average voter to figure that out, right? It's much easier to know if that person is a Democrat or Republican. That's why so many fewer people vote in primaries. And, you know, the old Democratic solid South, and was rotten to the core for that reason. They were, you know, the elites were able to sort of control things because the voters didn't really understand what was going on. When you have two parties that are close and competitive, they work like sharpening each other up. You know, that's just not what we're having in the state of Illinois, undoubtedly won't have in the future.
Dan, what are you going to be watching for in the weeks ahead? Amanda mentioned the Safety Act. This is the big criminal justice change, part of which was the end of cash bail that hasn't taken effect yet, despite the millions of dollars in advertising that might make people worry about it. That's scheduled for January 1st. There has been talk of making changes there. Where do you see things going? The legislature's coming back into session next week, right?
Yes. Well, one of the things I'm watching is whether they actually decide to return to town next week. I think they will. On the Safety Act, I think, you know, Democrats have been saying that they're going to make some tweaks and clarifications that they were probably going to make. At least they're portraying it as they were probably going to make anyway, regardless of these attacks that they've been enduring during the election. I think maybe looking more toward the new year, I'm looking to see what Democrats do on abortion, which they said they were going to do something about immediately after the Supreme Court decision, and then sort of kick the can down the road for a few months. One of the things the governor has talked a lot about is banning assault weapons and high capacity magazines after the Highland Park 4th of July parade shooting. That's another issue I think will likely to come up after the first of the year. And sort of further down the line, you know, back to what we were talking about the relative strength of the two parties is, what's going to happen if, you know, the economy slows down in a few years and the state budget gets shaky again and, you know, they have to look at various revenue raising opportunities. That was something the previous speaker, Mike Madigan, always wanted to make sure that there were some Republican votes on. And, you know, I just don't know if there are enough Republicans left who would vote for that kind of thing to do that. So it'll be interesting to see if that scenario plays out, how Speaker Welch and President Harmon deal with trying to round up Republican votes from a smaller Republican caucus and a perhaps more conservative Republican caucus in their respective chambers.
And Dan, that could hit relatively soon, given predictions about a recession. And so we could see that arise as soon as this year, as the next fiscal battle is fought.
Yeah.
Amanda, what are you, we're coming to the end of our time together, so less than a minute, but what are you watching for in the weeks and months ahead?
Literally all of what Dan said. I mean, abortion, gun control. I have pointed out that I do think that the calculus on that has changed after the Highland Park shooting, but we'll point out that Democratic supermajorities here are not new. This had been on the Democrats' agenda and yet never accomplished. With, however, additional members, that might be something that they will be able to pass. And I think really need to, given promises made in light of the 4th of July horrific incident. We'll be watching to see where Pritzker goes, what sort of his agenda looks like, again, as we talk about any potential national ambitions there, and watching again the future of the Republican Party. Who will be the next Republican leader of the Illinois House, and what does both the diminished party look like, as well as this very splintered party, as the rift between conservatives and moderates, I think, is shining brighter, and the Republicans take a look back at what happened this election and where they want to go in the future.
Amanda Vinicky from WTTW's Chicago Tonight, Dan Petrella with the Chicago Tribune, and Chris Mooney of the University of Illinois Chicago. Thanks so much. What a great conversation today as we recap the election. Appreciate you being with us.
My pleasure.
And we're going to leave it there. We have not had a chance to talk today. We did not talk about the proposed constitutional amendment that was backed by labor unions. That is because that is still up in the air as we are right now looking 90% of the vote in, 59% yes, 41% no. It needed 60% to pass directly, or it could have been, it's complicated, it could still pass. We're just waiting to have a race call on that, and that is something we can talk about in future programs. For now, we're going to leave it there. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening, and we will talk with you again tomorrow.